Welcome to Your Rights Program. 52 years ago, the United Nations General Assembly adopted two international treaties that would forever shape international human rights. First, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Created in the aftermath of the World War II, the two covenants together with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights became the International Bill of Human Rights, setting out the civil, cultural, economic, political, and social rights that are the birthright of all human beings. Ahead of the International Day of Human Rights to be celebrated this Sunday, December 10th, we ask, what needs to be done to guarantee the fundamental freedoms and protecting the human rights of all in South Sudan? Also quoting a famous writer who has said that today's human rights violations are the causes of tomorrow's conflicts. How do we avert this? This is the focus of our discussion on Your Rights Program with Commissioner Fidencio Charles Ladu from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission. And then we have Eugene Nindorera, Director of the Human Rights Division of the UN Mission in South Sudan. And we have Edmond Yakani, Executive Director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, CEPO. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Agol Alex, the program host. Now let's begin. What are your impressions on the human rights situation in South Sudan, and what for you are the sticky human rights issues in the country today? Let me begin with Edmond.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for Mirai for hosting us on this very important day. The day of our rights, the day of our humanity, the day of our survival, the day of our best life on the earth. I think by your question, our impression is that the situation is not impressing. That's the word I would like to use. Why? Because we have seen various reports that set light on the status of human rights in South Sudan. The recent one is one which was released by International Rescue Committee in relation to level of occurrence of sexual gender-based violence across the country. And also we have seen in Juba the cases of the unknown gunman that is taking away life of our renowned people, and we have seen the recent one is our colleague who have worked before with Bakita. His life has been taken away, and there's others which are also their lives have been taken away. We have seen the night hours armed robbery that is going on. So I think it's not impressing, but at least there's an action towards resolving that. That's what I can say. So I would say it's not impressing, it's disturbing.
Okay, Edmond. Now let me come to Fidencio Charles Ladu from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission. This question goes to you. From the South Sudan Human Rights Commission perspective, are you really concerned about the human rights situation in South Sudan in light of the growing threats of women being raped, targeted killings, name them? Welcome.
Thank you very much. Maybe before I go further, let me bring to the attention of our listeners that we are now within the 16 days of activism. That started from the 25th, and it will end on the 10th, that is on December, that is the Human Rights Day. And within these days, we are carrying out activities to remind ourselves of about our human rights situation in the country. And as Edmond put it, really, the situation is not impressing. It is really a very serious problem to the Human Rights Commission. And the commission was established, you know, to monitor and to report and investigate the violation of rights, and it is within our mandates that we are to look into it, that the situation of human rights is improved. That is why we are really working very hard. We are reporting, we are investigating cases, and we are really trying very much to improve the situation in the country, and that is our mandate.
Okay, let me just give a case scenario of what is happening in Ye River State. Like we have had in the past few months quite enormous reports of women being raped, you know, targeted killing, arbitrary arrest by men in uniform. Women groups in Ye have even gone to, law enforcement agencies to report some of these abuses. But what they are saying is whenever they get there, they are mocked, they are laughed at, and at times their issues are not being attended to. Have you received these reports, particularly from Ye River State?
Yeah, thank you. As I put it, is it our mandate to report and investigate all these cases. This not only in Ye, even in Juba, in different parts of the country. We are reporting, we are investigating, and it is unfortunately that our financial situation is not allowing us to go up to Yei, but we are receiving. We are receiving reports from the civil society's organization, and the same crimes is happening in Juba. We attend to it, report it, and even sometimes we come out with press statements to alert the government about what is happening in the country.
Okay, let me go straight to Mr. Eugene Ndorera. Mr. Eugene, it is the duty of the state to respect the fundamental rights of South Sudanese, the right to freedom of expression, the right to associate, name it. And yet it seems there is reluctance by the leaders to respect this. How is UNMISS, particularly the UNMISS Human Rights Division, supporting the state to uphold these rights? Welcome, Mr. Eugene.
Yeah, thank you very much. As you said, it's really the responsibility of the government to make sure that rights of South Sudanese are respected. From our side, as a human rights division, we are following up on a number of cases, trying to monitor and report like the World Human Rights Commission is doing and other NGOs. But what is important is that once we have those cases, we have to bring them to the attention of the government, and the government has the responsibility to take action. Unfortunately, there is a high level of impunity in South Sudan, because there is a number of alleged perpetrators where it's difficult even sometimes to do the investigation so that you can really identify them. And once they are identified, it's very important that those people have to be held accountable for what they have done. But unfortunately, it's not often the case. And as part of the fundamental freedoms, like freedom of movement, opinion, expression, it's important to see that although there are some progress, somehow I think there were some progress related to the government initiative on national dialogue. This is where a number of political prisoners were released in August. But I think for me what is important is that they should not be released because of the national dialogue, but first of all because whether you don't have enough charges and then they have nothing to do in jail, or you have charges and you have to bring them before the court. But most of the time you can see people being arrested and detained for months, even for years, without having access to their family, having access to lawyers. And this is not really what South Sudanese are expecting in a context where everybody is advocating for the promotion and the respect of human rights.
Yeah, Mr. Nonderere, maybe you'll help us understand this better. Like if there's a suspect arrested and is taken to custody, in legal terms or perspective, what is to be done? How long is this person supposed to be in custody or detention and to follow before he can be brought before courts of law for trial?
Normally, if it is arrested by the police have 24 hours to make a case and bring them to the suspect to the court. And then if there is charges, then he will go into prison. But at the end, it's important that he has access to a lawyer, because what we need is also to have a fair trial. It's really important to understand that human rights is not here, because we are often accused of trying to protect criminals. That's not our role. Our role is to make sure that those who have committed atrocities, especially when they are targeting innocent people, which is happening in South Sudan, where people are killed because of their ethnic group or something like that, it is important to make sure that those people are going to be held accountable and have to be brought before the justice. And it is also important to make sure that those who have been arrested, if they have nothing against them, they have to be released. So we need to protect the society by fighting impunity, and at the same time we have to make sure that rights of people are not going to be violated.
Yeah, Mr. Edmond, let me come back to you. What is the role of the civil society in this, in trying to see that people's rights are observed, are respected, and even people who perpetuate human rights violations are brought to book? What is the role of the civil society? What are you doing to that effect?
I think as civil society, we have three main roles. Role number one is to sensitize the public about their rights, to educate them about their rights. But not only educating about their rights, but also to educate them about their duties and responsibility to safeguard their rights. That's the first one, that we make sure we sensitize people. In South Sudan, we have the basic document or instrument is called the Bill of Rights. Teach them about the Bill of Rights, but also give them knowledge about their responsibilities and duties to safeguard their rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. Mm. The second one is to document any violations that are taking place. For example, if there's any violation of human rights going on, we document them. After document them, independently verify. Once we verify them, then we go to the next. The next is to advocate for the application of the law in regards to any violations that we have documented. So as Eugene have said, is that sometimes we have been seen as we are protecting perpetrators, but no, we are working on how can the law be applied in a better, fair manner rather than really using the law to deny people their rights. So we have three main roles: sensitization, documentation of violations, and advocating for the application of the law. That means bringing perpetrators to book and those who their rights are violated to see that there's a response to the perpetrators who have violated their rights.
Ms. Fidencio, you earlier told me that your job basically is now being impeded due to lack of funds. You cannot go to some of these areas to investigate these violations. But you do receive reports, like you said, from Yei. Now, what do you do after receiving the reports? I mean, could you cite examples where you have received this kind of reports and maybe some of these perpetrators or suspects have been arrested? And after receiving the reports, what do you do? Do you just receive and keep them there in your offices?
Okay, thank you. We receive the reports, then we compile them. Mm. We analyze them, we compile them, then we put it in our reports to the parliament or to the government or to the president's office. We have a case like we received a report from Kubi. There was a case of raping in the local area.
Yeah.
Then we hurried there. Our field workers went there. They saw the site. They investigated the incident. And they compiled the report, and I think still they are following it up to now.
Now, I believe you know of Kejukeji County, which is one of the counties in Yei River State.
Yeah.
It has been in the spotlight of late. There's been also reports of violations. There are people being beheaded. Just yesterday we had a legislator, an MP, was shot dead. How connected? What is your network? Are you widespread even to Kejukeji? You know what is happening there?
Yeah, we have our civil societies there. And here, even in Juba, we are networking. We have our human rights forum, whereby we share informations, we analyze them together, and we compile them in form of reports, and it is forwarded to the government.
That's great. Now, what measures, in your view, can be taken to ensure that these human rights abuses are controlled from the Human Rights Commission?
As Edmund put it, because some of the violations can be, can be done out of ignorance.
Mm.
So our role is we need to make the awareness of people about their human rights clearly. Mm. Let them know about their rights, and then we need to tell them that they also have roles towards the other citizens.
Sure.
And these rights are enshrined in the Constitution, because violation of rights is meaning violation of the Constitution. So it is really important for us to know, so that we are able to defend our own rights and also to defend other people's rights. That is really very important. And I think respect of rights is not the responsibility of human rights alone or the government. It is a collective responsibility for all of us as individuals. We need to start it by ourselves, within our families, in the offices, in our communities. From there, it will grow. It has to be started by an individual himself or herself. Mm. From there, it will grow. We don't say it is for Human Rights Commission, it is for the government or for the police. It is a collective responsibility for all of us.
Okay, Edmund, I can see it's like you want to add something.
My addition is the context where we are now. If we're saying what should be done in order to address the situation, for me, number one is that we need to stop the violence. You know, in a situation where you have active violent conflict going on, the chances of having huge commitment of human rights atrocities very high. Why? Because there's several factors that contribute to that. For example, a non-gunman in Juba, the factor contributing to that is a deteriorating economical situation. People's salary is unable to be paid. Now, those who we assume to protect us are turning the guns against us. Simply, it's not because of anything. It's because of the economical pressure that they're getting on them, because they have families. So I think for me, the best thing we need to advocate right now is to stop the violence. Once we stop the violence, even this case that you are talking about in Kajukeji, the question of violence, proliferation of arms in the hands of our communities. See what is going on in Duke. What has happened in Jongole some few days, and see what has happened few days in Lake State. We are losing people in big numbers. Actually, the death of our citizens due to intercommunal conflict is becoming more higher than the death due to armed conflict. So, but the question is, will those incidents not constitute a crime against humanity one day, one time, if somebody's sitting down and documenting? It will. So we need to stop the violence in the country so that now we have chance to have time to hold perpetrators accountable. Because with the violence, perpetrators have huge opportunity of escaping because everything is politicized. If somebody's killed, people will politicize the issues. So application of law in a politicized environment is not easy. Because sometimes this politicization of issues take ethnic dimension. There's a good boys, there's a bad boys, there's like, you know, you take sides. So for me, the first thing is that all of us collectively have to work to stop the violations. And the linkages between violence and human rights violations is really very thin. As long as human rights violations continuing, violence will not stop. So both of them are sort of like faces of same coin. So we need to make sure that we stop violation of commitment of violation of human rights. Same time as we need to stop the violence so that we have time to watch out on our institutions. Are they effective in responding, in delivering their responsibility to protect human rights or not?
Sure. Dear listener, in case you have just tuned in, you're listening to Your Rights program here on Radio Miraya. My name is Agol Alex, the program host. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly. Let's get a break.
استمعوا لأخبار راديو ميرايا حول وعن ولشعب جنوب السودان.
Welcome back. We're still getting on with our discussions. Now, let me come back to Eugene Nindorera from the UNMISS Human Rights Division. Can you briefly explain the roles and efforts of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to ensure protection and promotion of human rights globally and more specifically in South Sudan? Welcome, Mr. Eugene.
Yeah, I think our role is somehow like what Fidencia has said about what the commission is doing. So basically, we are monitoring a number of cases. We are reporting on them. Since we are part of the UN, we are also reporting to the Security Council on a regular basis or to the Human Rights Council. But at the end of the day, what is important is to make sure that we can stop these kind of violations. And it is, as a UN, I think I want to emphasize what Edmond was just saying, that there is a need to stop the violence first, because otherwise it will be difficult to have the human rights of people respected, especially in a context like South Sudan, because when you have a conflict, there are also some rules that need to be respected in a conflict. So in South Sudan and in many other countries, there is a conflict, and most of the time the victims are civilians who are not even involved in the conflict, and this is not acceptable. And more importantly, it's about women and children. So there is really something that needs to be done. What we are doing also as a human rights component from the UN is also about capacity building. We are training people, because at the end of the day, we are not here forever. We are here to strengthen the capacity of the national actors, especially the government, because it is their primary responsibility. And beside that, we are really trying to focus on some of the key actors. That's why we are providing a lot of training to SPLA, to NSS, to civil society, sensitization of the population, and all of that. But at the end of the day, like Eamon said, I think the application of the law is very important. So the lack of accountability, the need to continue fighting impunity, is also something that we have on our agenda. And we are also, like it was requested by the peace agreement, we are also advocating for the establishment of the Arbitral Court, because there are people who have killed a lot of innocent people that need to be held accountable. And if it is not before the national courts, then they will have to appear before an international tribunal, a mixed tribunal like the ICCHCSS, the Arbitral Court in South Sudan, that was requested in the peace agreement.
Sure. Fidencio, you have heard Mr. Nindorera saying they have been working with all the government apparatus and institutions in trying to put capacity building programs in place, trainings, and I believe your commission, the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, is included. Now you have heard him. Is that all you need? If you are given a chance to ask for more, what would that be in terms of trying to help you better do your job or your work?
Yeah, we have been working together, as he put it. We are having our human rights forum, and it is always sponsored by them. We do it like 3 times a year, and it is from their side, they are the main sponsors. What I would like to put it for, maybe for more cooperation, is that sometimes we may need to go out to the States, because we used to have like 10 offices, and those offices are now closed because of the situation. And if we are to go out, I think we can collaborate together, because they have their transportation system. If we can collaborate and maybe work together, and sometimes also we can receive a report from their end, because they also have their offices in the States. Through them, we can also access some of the information, and I think that will be better.
You know, some human rights activists have called for coordinated response to human rights abuses. Edmund, would you like to likely see this happen in a more broader context?
Yes, exactly. This is a very key principle, that we need to coordinate our work, whether being it in terms of documenting violations or whether it being in sharing information about violence, so that at least you may not have 3 organizations reporting one particular incident as different incidents. And I think that's why the forum is very important, that it was used, is meant specifically to coordinate engagement or efforts around human rights agenda. And I think that's why the forums come. So like everybody have to come to the forum, and we bring data and we harmonize data, we compile the data, we agree all. And then when Human Rights Commission is taking a report that is presenting to the government, whether being it to the government in terms of to the parliament or to the office of president, it is a harmonized, unified information that we call upon the government to respond to. And this is what I've said before, that there's efforts, though the situation is bad, but there's still a little efforts people are trying to do to respond to human rights violations. So we need to see that happen. So in terms of like, if there's an incident happening, for example, in location A, instead of us driving so many vehicles, separate its vehicle, commission their vehicle, or UNMISS their vehicle, we can use one vehicle because we are not burning a lot of fuel. Mm-hmm. So we use one vehicle, we all go together, and if we're to collect the information, we have one tool, we generate, we all agree as 3 institutions that, you know, this is the situation. That will help us in being cost effective and then also minimizing resources in terms of wastage.
Yes. Mr. Eugene, how else important do you think is coordination between various human rights bodies or activists?
No, I think human rights, there are so many challenges in the context of South Sudan that if we are not putting our efforts together to have this kind of synergy, it will be almost impossible to achieve good work and have some credible impact. There is a lot that needs to be done. We all agree that there are some progress. I even had a discussion recently with some of the authority within the NSS. I was told that a number of NSS officers were held accountable and they were dismissed. This is where we want to see the progress. And the training that we are providing is not the training for the purpose of just train people. We want then, after the training, we want to see some change in the behavior of the officials that are supposed to protect the rights of people. And sometimes we have to say very clearly that there is not even need of a training to know that it is not acceptable to kill a woman or to rape a girl of 5 years old, which is happening in the country, in this country, and like in other countries. This is not acceptable, and there is no need for a training for that. But it is important that even whoever is an alleged rapist, he has also to be brought before the court, and he has to be, there is the due process that has to be respected. And he has to be brought before the court, have his lawyer, and at the end of the day, there will be a sentence, and then that's how the society will move forward. It is really very, very important not to avoid this kind of extrajudicial killings like we have seen, where people will just expedite and kill people because he has accused to have been involved in a armed robbery or in a case of rape.
Yeah, Fidencio, let's look at the South Sudan Human Rights Commission and the crisis that is still going on, though there are efforts, enormous efforts going on to try to resolve what is happening in the country so that this country, once again, one day attains lasting peace. Let's look at the crisis and your commission. How has this crisis particularly affected your job as a commission?
The crisis affected not only the commission but the whole system in the country. And to make it worse, maybe because of the hardship, people are saying the Human Rights Commission is not working. It's like we are just there wasting time and we are not helping. Without knowing that, our mandate is only to report and investigate and all that. They believe that human rights is like a police, like when there is an incident, we go and arrest
and
people.
They
wanted it to be that way, but that is not the mandate for human rights. And the other thing is that we are not able to do whatever we are supposed to be doing, although we are trying to carry out our mandate, but because of the difficulties, we are facing a lot of, you know, a lot of problems. Like we believe that this issue of sensitization is really one of the important things that are supposed to be done. We're supposed to be moving around the states to sensitize the people about their rights, but unfortunately, because of the situation, we are not able to do that. But still, we are trying with the help of the other stakeholders, our other partners, like the NGOs. We are trying our level best to do whatever we can.
Okay. Dear listener, in case you've just tuned in, this is Your Rights Program, and my guest in the studio is Fidencio Charles Lado from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, and then we have Mr. Eugene Indorera, Director of the Human Rights Division of the UN Mission in South Sudan, and then Edmond Yakani, Executive Director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization. I'm your host, Agol Alex. Stay tuned. Let's get a break. We'll be back shortly.
Mama, say taruf hayatana kan bikun kef. Lokan bahar tanna de mafi?
Ah, Juliet, o kan bukun sab said it. I nuked aizola sagashara moyota bahar.
Dola tanna kebir, lanna kulu. Kalenna gesim hajat kula lanna indi be baginas, asanumon kaman bi gesim hajat alumon yindi, lanna kaman. Junub Sudan, lanna kulu.
Arisala dijaikum min mufawdiye Junub al-Sudan lissalam wal-musalaha bidaam min barnaamij al-umam al-muttahida littanmiya.
Listener, welcome back. You are still listening to Your Rights Program here on Radio Miraya. My name is Agol Alex, the program host, and of three panelists here in the studio, Fidencio Charles Lado from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, Mr. Eugene Nindorera from the Director of the Human Rights Division of the UN Mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, and Edmond Yakani, Executive Director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, SEPO. Now, let me go back to Fidencio Charles from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission. I have a question for you. How important is it for the government to lead by example as its stewards to guarantee the fundamental freedoms and protecting the human rights of all people?
As I put it, it is within our constitution, and it is part of the constitution. That means violating the constitution, the rights, it means violating the constitution. And these rights are there to make us live in dignity. For you know, when there are rights, there is something saying here, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a respect, and it is to give us our dignity. Mm. So for us to respect those rights, to implement it and to protect it, means there is peace, and there will be peace in the country. People will be living in harmony, and there will be peace in general. Respect of rights means there is peace, and there is progress, there is development, there is dignity for the citizens. But without respecting those rights, without respecting the Bill of Rights enshrined in our constitution, it means things will just fall apart, like the situation we are in now.
Yes, Mr. Edmund, how important is it for the government to live up to its task or obligation of ensuring human rights, people's rights are respected and promoted?
First, that will allow citizens not to take the law into their hand. That's the importance, that if the state responds to violations of human rights, then that deter any citizen from taking the law into their hands, because they're aware that the state is ready to respond at any moment they give a violation. And practical, let me give a case. Look at the case of Train Hotel, when the government went to investigate. That somehow have sent a message to the people, now there are people who are committed to see that human rights have been addressed or been investigated. Though have brought us some bit of questions. Why? Because the humanitarian workers and the foreigners, and then the South Sudanese are not considered to be very important. Why this particular case and other previous cases are going. So I think the government have the responsibility to take the lead. And also when the president challenged the leadership of the law enforcement agencies, that some of them are behind these activities of a known gunman. Look how impressive the citizens are. So I think the government to be proactive in responding to their task in terms of providing obligation to ensure that human rights are upheld, human rights are respected, and perpetrators are held accountable. I think that opened a window for citizens not to take the law into their hands, because citizens take the law into their hands when they see that the state is not responding. And they feel that because the state is not responding, then there's nobody who is responsible to handle perpetrators accountable. So the best way is, let me just deal with it eye to eye, which is like the Old Testament's approach. So I think the government have a responsibility to an example. And I think that they have done some few examples that I think they need to sustain such examples that have done positively.
Sure. Mr. Eugene, would you like to compliment on this?
Yeah, I think the responsibility of the government, I think I fully agree with Edmund, but there is another area that I would like really maybe to emphasize, because from the beginning of this debate, we have been also only talking about civil and political rights. While the government has also a responsibility in terms of economic and social rights.
Sure.
We are facing a situation in South Sudan where people in need are not being assisted, because sometimes there are a lack of access, and access is sometimes because of the government, and the government should really provide the access to humanitarians so that they can do their job and assist the South Sudanese. That's very important. We have a situation where there is a lot of children who are not at school. School have been occupied by other people. We have a situation where it's really a challenge when you are going to go at the hospital to get a doctor, and if you are there, you have to spend a lot of money. And there is also this war situation where we are seeing some areas where there is food insecurity. And we had even this year, two or I don't know how many states where the famine was declared. Mm. And the famine in the context of South Sudan is related to the conflict. It's not about the weather. So that's really some of the things that I wanted to add to the discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Eugene, let me maybe ask you still this question. What will be the UN mission's priorities looking forward? And how can we ensure that the government of South Sudan continues to protect those on the front line of human rights advocacy?
I will repeat what Edmund has said earlier. The first priority is to stop the violence. And this is about the government, but this is also about other people who are involved in the armed conflict. So we are going to have, what we call the revitalization forum soon. Mm. I think I would really advocate and appeal for all the actors to look at really how the population of South Sudanese are suffering and what to do to stop the violence, to have a kind of ceasefire. That really the first priority, according to me. The second one is the government to take its responsibility, because I repeat, primary responsibility is on the government. Mm-hmm. So they have really a very important role to play. You cannot control whether all the government actors, what they are doing, but at least what the government should do is to make sure that when there is a government agent who is involved in a crime or in a human rights violation, he has to be held accountable, so that the population will know that the government is not supporting this kind of behavior and they are really taking sanctions against those who have committed these kind of crimes against their own population that they are supposed to protect. So I will stop to these two priorities, because I can have a long list of priorities, but it is important to highlight what are the main priorities according to me. And then the rule of law. So make sure that, for instance, as I said earlier, people who are arrested, their rights has to be respected. We cannot continue to have this situation where people can stay 2 years, 3 years without being brought before the court, without having access to the family, etc. We have seen some progress, but there are still a long way to go.
I see. Fidencio, would you like to say something still on accountability?
Okay, I agree with what my colleague has been saying. I can just take one example, like for the government to stop the war. For the government to stop the war is only a collective responsibility. It's like for all of us, like we need to give our reports to encourage the government. We give the correct reports. We investigate the cases, and we also work with the civil societies. All the activities are to be done collectively, so that we also encourage the government to stop the war. Otherwise, if it is to be left for the government alone, it may not result to our expectation. But what I'm saying is that we need really to work together. We need to continue doing our work, to continue investigating, to continue advising the government through our reports.
I see. This Sunday is International Human Rights Day. We understand the celebration, of course, will be pushed to Monday. How important is this day in the context of South Sudan?
Okay, the International Human Rights Day is celebrated globally. It is to remind us, first of all, we are to honor UN because of the Declaration of Universal Human Rights. And then this day is celebrated for us, you know, to keep on reminding us about the human rights, and to sensitize people about rights, and to make people work hard towards respect of human rights.
Okay, dear listener, we are winding up the program. Edmund, what is your message as the country prepares to observe this very important day?
My message will be one, let's stop the violence. And by stopping the violence, also let's stop violation of human rights. Because the respect of my rights is the respect of my life, and I'm called South Sudanese when my rights are upheld, are observed, and they're respected. So my last message is that all of us collectively, let's uphold and respect human rights. And we call upon the state to take the primary responsibility of making sure perpetrators are held accountable, those who may commit atrocities against us.
I see. Mr. Eugene, just in 1 minute.
No, just to emphasize that the role of the government is important, but let's look at also the other armed groups, because the IO and other armed actors, they have also their responsibility, and they should be also held accountable. So this is really very, very important. For the Human Rights Day, I think we had a theme that we started last year, which for me is a very strong one in the context of South Sudan. Let's stand up for someone's rights today and tomorrow, and no matter who the person is. And this is what we need to do in the context of South Sudan. I'm not going to protect someone because we are coming from the same ethnic group. I have to protect anyone. So that's really my very important message. And I wish all the South Sudanese to work on not only on that day, but from the 1st of January to the 21st of December.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for coming to our studio here on Radio Miraya to have this conversation on the rights program. With me in the studio has been Fidencio Charles Lado from the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, Eugene Indorera from Director of the Human Rights Division of the UN Mission in South Sudan, ANMIS, and Edmond Yakani, Executive Director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, CEPO. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Agol Alex. I've been the program host. Stay tuned for the news that is coming up next. Goodbye.
Darkness, me and my fam from the dungeon found that light.